Welcome to this week's edition of Worst Seats in the House with Michael Russo. I'm Anthony LaPanta. Again, this week we come your way from the Worst Seats in the House as we record the show from the press box high above the ice sheet at the Xcel Energy Center. As always, our show is only possible because of our great sponsors, Profile by Sanford, Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Connecticut water treatments, Kowalski's, Chris Lindahl Real Estate, Minnesota Propane, and the Bosch Law Firm. Strange week for the Minnesota Wild. A couple of games in St. Louis, a postponed game against the Blues that was supposed to be in St. Paul that will now be made up in the newly formed final week of the NHL regular season. Coincidentally, the NHL had announced just a couple of days earlier they were going to extend the regular season by a week, so the Wild and Blues will now play during that week. And sounds like a day game against the Coyotes. It's just another in a strange set of circumstances we've been dealing with all season long.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, how ironic that that the Wild, who had the COVID outbreak that really changed a lot of the protocols in this year, wind up playing in the last week of the season. And it's not even because of the COVID outbreak. It's because of, obviously, the unfortunate incident that happened in Brooklyn Center. So now, as you mentioned, day game on Wednesday, and then we'll see what happens with the Sharks games. I think a lot of that has to do with what the government decides in terms of curfews and things like that. And hopefully things simmer down by that time that happens. But it's funny, you mentioned the worst seats in the house. And before we started the podcast, Anthony and I spent 5 minutes trying to figure out if Kirill Kaprizov was the winger on the Zuccarello-Rask line, because both of us don't have our binoculars, and it looks like Kaprizov got a haircut, so we weren't able to tell. And it's funny, I'm looking at Sarah McClellan down there with her binoculars. She's a veteran reporter, unlike me.
Right, exactly. No, and I mean, this is what we deal with from here, so, and especially for these morning skates, where normally for a practice or a morning skate, we'd be sitting down in the lower bowl. Yep. And you can easily see guys' faces. And in this case, these are just some of those little challenges where it's a left shot guy about that height. Second number appears to be a 7 on the back of his helmet, but you can't tell the difference between the 3 or the 9, and that would be the difference between Rao or Kaprizov. Yeah. So,
and then, with all due respect to Kyle, who is a good skating player.
You're just waiting for one move on the skates to say, no, that's not Kyle Rao.
Like, Kaprizov did this, like, one skate, like, 360, and I'm like, yeah, I think that's Kaprizov.
Right.
So, it's so funny because, you know, there are about half the teams in the league that at morning skates have nameplates and numbers on the back of their jerseys, and the Wild don't. And you don't realize how big of an issue that is until you're up here for morning skates.
So. Well, right, because when you're down near the ice, even then, even the visiting teams, you can usually make out enough of and by process of elimination, well, his number starts with a 2, not a 5, so it's got to be this guy, not that guy. He's a left shot, not a right shot. But there are always, on seemingly every team, there are just a couple guys that look similar enough in their stature, what handed they shoot, the way they skate, and then maybe there's one number that's the same. And I got to tell you, I mean, it happens even when you're calling play-by-play for games where, and this year more so than others, where you're calling games off a TV monitor where it might be a guy that's for the Wild, for example, in past years, I used to every once in a while get caught with Eric Haller or Jason Zucker. Both lefties, both could fly, both had a 6 on their second number. And if they were just jumping off the bench, there were some arenas where they'd be going one direction. All you'd see is the 6, and you'd have to hesitate for a second, like, well, they just made a change. It could be either one of them. And there are guys like that, it seems, on almost every team where there's just one thing that is similar enough where it catches you from time to time.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And so this year has been that year. What I'm amazed at about the worst seats in the house up here is how much just being in the lower level of this press box where the scribes sit compared to up here in the broadcast, how much harder it is just from this one level.
8 feet.
Yeah, and I did a podcast the other day with Joe O'Donnell, and we were sitting down on the lower level. And in the far corner by the Echo Lab there, I couldn't tell it right away if it was Landeskog or Rantanen that went crashing into the boards. And right away when he got up, I looked, and I was able to clearly see it was Landeskog. But there's a great example of just where if that happened up on this upper level, I don't think I would have known it. So,
well, and that's another example. 95, 96, yeah. Not 92 is Landeskog, but for me, 95, 96, Burakovsky and Rantanen,
yeah.
Those guys look a little similar. They're both left shot guys, and at a quick glance, sometimes when you're calling the game, it's hard to tell, was that 95 or 96? And especially when it's off a TV monitor instead of in person, where you really pay attention to when guys are coming over the
it's
boards.
It's a good thing
the
Wild didn't get Nick Foligno, and then you would have had a distinguished 17 and 71. That would have been tough.
Well, that would have been, actually that would have been easier because, you know, you see the, and.
I'm just kidding.
You can't, to me it's just, it's the challenge is when you can't see the guys' faces, and hockey jerseys are, unlike the jersey in any other sport, where there's no number on the front.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose baseball, there's no number on the front, but you can, that's totally different. In terms of fast flow games like basketball or football or hockey, where it, you can see the jersey number. Well, here, sometimes if the play's coming a certain way, you might not see the back of a guy's jersey. And you really, it is a challenge to catch those numbers sometimes.
Yeah. So we're one day past the trade deadline now. It really was what I expected. I expected the Wild to either make one little tweak maybe or do, you know, pretty much nothing. You know, when I found out that they were going after Nick Foligno about 5 days ago and did some reporting on that and was able to finally iron it down Saturday and do my story on it, I wondered maybe that since they were going after Nick Foligno that maybe that he felt they were a forward short and would go after somebody else yesterday. I'm sure that Billy Guerin had some conversations, but as he has been saying all along to me and to the fans, is that cost is everything. And he did not, unless it was for something special, want to give up any of his first round picks. He didn't even want to give up his second or a third round pick. And heck, when you see Kaprizov on a fifth round pick, why throw away a fourth or fifth even for just a rental? And so, you know, they get through the trade deadline yesterday. They don't make any moves. What was your biggest thought on that?
Well, I was intrigued by Foligno, and he would have been a great fit here. But when you see the price paid by Toronto, I mean, not only to get
first
Foligno,
and two fourths,
right, to get Foligno a first and a fourth, and then had to send an extra four to San Jose to eat part of the salary. If that was the price, no chance.
Yeah.
And there's no way that I wouldn't have come anywhere close to that. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, I like Nick Foligno. I would not have wanted to trade a number one pick for him.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. There's no chance in my mind that I would have given a number one for Nick Foligno. And I'm not saying it was a bad deal for Toronto. They might be Nick Foligno away from making a run at a cup. I don't believe Minnesota is a Nick Foligno away from that. And there's no way I would have traded a number one for him.
Yep.
Let alone a one and two fours.
Who is that in the corner barreled over? Was that Bonino or Sturm? He got hit by a puck. Or is that Parisi?
It's Bonino.
It's somebody in green. So I could tell colors now, but just not who's wearing the colors.
Yep. Your eyes are good enough to discern between like bright green and bright red?
It's definitely Nick. So, you know, the other interesting thing about the prices paid, and I don't know if GMs really look at this, but I would think some teams do. Like, when you can't even get revenue this year and you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and you're willing to give up a first-round pick, I mean, if there's any place that's probably not going to have fans all year, it would be up in Canada. And you're willing to do that in a year that you might not even get gate revenue no matter how far they go. It just seems so strange to me. You know, I know the Maple Leafs are a different beast than anybody else, but like, can you imagine if you're Billy Guerin and you're going to pay a first-round pick for maybe a month and a half of Nick Foligno and you're getting 3,000 fans in a game for like not even a quarter of the home games?
Yeah, I don't know how much that would play in. I think if you have a chance to win, you go for it no matter if there's fans in the building or not. But I thought that price was too high. I thought some of the other little moves that teams made, I thought Colorado's moves were really good to add Nemeth and Soderberg. I think that's
what about Doobie?
Well, Nemeth and Soderberg, I think they needed a backup goaltender. They really did. Yeah. I mean, and it's not Dubnyk might never play in the playoffs for them, but the fact that he'll be able to give Grubauer a couple days off between here and the finish. And the reality is it might not have mattered anyway. They might have enough of a cushion where down the stretch they were able to rest him. But Grubauer was starting to show some wear and some fatigue. He'd played so much for them early, and every time they went to the backup goaltender, it was a clown show. And so Dubnyk should help him there. But I thought their moves were really good. And I thought, if you want to talk about price, what Boston gave up to get Taylor Hall, I think was without a doubt the best, maybe low risk, high reward move of the deal. And Hall might bring nothing. I mean, it's hard if you're Buffalo to say we should have gotten more. He had a guy who had, what, 2 goals in 37 or 38 games at the Sabres.
And has been bad for a couple of years.
And, right, exactly. So get whatever you can for him. But if you're Boston, what if all of a sudden the guy's rejuvenated and he looks like the Taylor Hall of 2 years ago? Now you got an unbelievable purchase for a low cost heading down the stretch.
I like Kevin Adams a lot, but I think he made a rookie GM move when I believe Kevin was GM at that point, when they gave Taylor the 1 year deal with a no move. Because if there were other teams, and I guarantee there were, that were interested in Hall yesterday, even if they were willing to give up a better package, Hall decided where he wanted to go, and he made it very clear that his no move got him to Boston, which is where he wants to sign long term. We'll see if that happens. But that no move might have cost them a bigger price. But regardless, to only get a second round pick for Taylor Hall, you know, it made sense for Boston. But it doesn't make sense for a team like Minnesota.
Well, no, that's exactly what I'm saying. Is I think for Boston it was a tremendous deal because you've got a potential for a game changer type
especially of guy. Playing with the players that are on Boston that are, you know, because he's more playmaker than goal scorer at this point. And, you know, but if you have put him on a line with Krejci's such an incredible playmaker that, you know, you might be able to wake up a guy that yesterday admitted on NHL Network that he's not a confident hockey player right now. Like, I can't imagine.
Well, is anybody in Buffalo?
Well, yeah, well, but I can't imagine. But he didn't look too confident in Arizona either. And I thought he was garbage every time he played the Wild in Arizona. And, you know, if I'm Boston and I turned, like Don Sweeney, and I turned on that NHL Network interview and he looked like he was like ready to cry about how not confident he was, I was like, whoa, I don't know if that'd be, you know, confident as a GM to go get him. It's just, the other things that I think, by the way, what was interesting about the Dubnyk trade is, and Adrian Dater tweeted this right after Grubauer was pulled against the Wild in that 8-3 loss, is that there'll be a new goaltender here by Monday. So it's like, it's just kind of ironic how the Wild, who are paying half of Dubnyk's salary, essentially probably dictated to Joe Sakic, I better get another goalie here to stave some, to get Grubauer some rest, because he was so bad against the Wild.
Throw on top of it that it's Greg Pattern that goes the other way.
Well, that was just to get rid of the contract. Right. And Pattern was immediately assigned to the taxi squad there and probably eventually will go to the minors. He hasn't played a game since the Wild got rid of him. And that was one big catalyst to the Wild trade with him, is that they wanted to get Bowen Byram in their lineup, but they couldn't afford to. So what they did is they decided, well, Ian Cole's going to have to be the odd guy out here, and Ian Cole, one, doesn't deserve to be the odd guy out. But the other thing that Ian Cole, that Joe Sakic, I think, really, to me, says everything about his class, is that he didn't feel that Ian Cole would not handle it well, but again, didn't deserve to be the guy to be put in that position, where Greg Pattern, it's like he didn't even care. So it's like, you know, he would handle it better. So they sent Ian Cole. I mean, it's crazy how quickly that trade happened.
Right.
Like, I've heard that was not in the works, and the Wild were suddenly searching. Like, Bill Guerin realized, you know what, at some point this year I'm going to want to make my third pair better with, you know, to have somebody with Soucy not being Hunter or Pattern. And then that day in Anaheim, he gets a call from Joe Sakic while he's doing a podcast with me, no granted. And he sends it to voicemail. And 2 hours later, they make the trade for Ian Cole, and that's what the call was about. So it was like it happened that day. This isn't what a typical situation.
Well, and they were on their way to Colorado, so they were able to.
Well, they were on their. They were in LA.
Right, they're on their way to the trip that was going to eventually get to Colorado. Yep. But they were able to. Colorado was also on the West Coast, so they were able to
drive them down.
Drive them down there, avoid all of any quarantine time,
I mean, it really
and anything.
Out
it was. And Billy Guerin told he said this one came about in about an hour. So it you know, sometimes that kind of stuff happens and just works. But I just think the layers. in which the Minnesota Wild are connected in those trades, that it's pattern for Dubnyk, and Dubnyk winds up in Colorado, who may well be a playoff opponent to the Wild at some point. I mean, it's really it's funny how deeply intertwined they'll all those teams have become.
No doubt. By the way, it's spring in Minnesota, time to start preparing our homes for warmer weather. To help you get ready, my friends over at Aquarius Home Services offer a free new cooling and heating system estimate, and they have great quality options for new air conditioners and indoor air quality systems. It all starts with an in-home visit to discuss your needs and provide options that make sense for you. For a limited time, they have a new AC for as low as $45 a month. They strive on providing superior customer service and an all-around five-star customer experience from beginning to end. Contact my friends at Aquarius Home Services today at AquariusHomeServices.com. And here's a word from Minnesota Propane.
Hey, I'm Laura Shera, and did you know, according to the Environmental Protection Agency Energy Star program, that propane is almost three times more efficient than grid electricity? We all care about our planet, so let's use energy efficiently to reduce our environmental footprint. You can heat your homes, your water, your cabins, your businesses with propane. The right energy right now. Propane, clean American energy. For more information, go to propane.com.
Back here on Worst Seats in the House, Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta, thanks as always for tuning in. They're practicing the power play right now, Anthony, which is absolutely on fire. They have 11 power play goals in the last X amount of games. I'm sure you know the answer to that. As you're working on your charts there for tomorrow's show. But it is interesting that their power play has heated up with guys like, you know, we're just like, get Rask off the power play, get Bonino off the power play, and yet their power play suddenly is winning.
It's the best in the NHL in April. Number one in the NHL in April. They were number 31 in the first month of the season. They were in the high 20s the next 2 months. But, you know, we talked all year about that the optics of the power play didn't match the numbers, and at least that's what I felt. I felt all year that if you ever just kind of eliminated it and looked at it through a tight lens at one specific game, if you threw out the fact that they were at 6% or 8% for the year, you never would have looked at it and said, wow, that looks like the 31st best power play in the league. There were a couple games where it looked disjointed, but most of the time it looked far better than what the numbers indicated. And so I believed all along that eventually they would come back toward the mean. Not necessarily that I thought they'd be, okay, they'll be the number one power play for a month, and it's a long way to go to be a month. But I just think there's too much talent. And it passed the eye test. Having Rask and Bonino both on it is strange, but they were so desperate to win faceoffs that this way you get two guys out there that, especially with how often the Wild have been kicked out of faceoff circles lately, you get two guys on the ice that give you an increased chance to win a draw and start with a puck, and that has also been a part of it. But you put Kevin Fiala and Kirill Kaprizov on a power play unit together, eventually they're going to score.
One would think. I talked to Bonino and Evason on the Zooms this week about the whole linesman epidemic of kicking guys out, and you could tell that they are absolutely tired of it. You know, both of them said the same thing, just drop the effing puck, essentially.
Here's the only thing I'd say about that, and I listened to your questions with them, and I agree, it is getting ridiculous. But the Wild played a two-game set against San Jose, the two games they lost out in San Jose against the Sharks. And in those two games, the Sharks did not have a single draw taken by a winger. They had four guys in two games, four guys only, that took faceoffs. Now, there were a couple of instances where they had two centers on the ice, but only four guys took faceoffs for them in two games. The Wild had eight players in one game take draws and eight players in the next game take draws. So there has to be something to it. I haven't watched it closely enough to see if the Wild truly are the ones that are cheating more often than anybody else, but it can't be. It can't always be the linesman.
Yeah. When you're the second worst faceoff team in the league, you better start cheating at some point. Maybe that is what's going on.
It's like the guy who doesn't get along with his coach and he's in the fifth city and it's always the coach's fault. Well, at some point you have to look in the mirror.
How about when he's on his same the fifth coach on the same team and it's always the coach's fault?
Well, I mean, that could be too, but it can't always be the linesman.
Yeah.
At some point, you have to say, okay, well, maybe it's us.
Yeah.
And I do think the linesman, and that was just one example where the opposing team didn't have anybody booted out.
Yeah.
There have been plenty of games where the other team's been getting kicked off the dot, too. So it's not only the Wild. I'm just saying that it's happened to the Wild a lot more than their opponents over the last, say, 2, 3, 4 weeks. But man, I mean, just drop the puck and let's go.
Oh, it's just – it's such a pain. I was talking to a scout that's an assistant GM for another team a couple weeks ago. It was me and somebody, another scout that's a head honcho for another team, and this guy came up to me and just lit into the linesman. And first draw of the second period, it happened again, and it was like the linesman from center ice that did it, and he texted me right away, and he's like, "You see what I mean? Like, it just happened." And it's just, I don't know, it's just out of control. The other thing I asked Bonino that was interesting that I haven't written about yet that I should is his tendency sometimes on his weak side to actually turn his left, his stick into a right, essentially into a righty to take the face off from that side. But he doesn't do it all the time. So I found it very, very interesting that the reason why he doesn't do it all the time is he just decides in his pre-scout if the guy he's going to take, the center he's taking to draw is going to try to win it with his skate. That's when he decides, I'm going to quickly turn my stick right to his strong side.
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch over the course of the season. And, you know, he hasn't been as good on draws as he was early in the season. And, in fact, lately has been moved to the wing, where he still ends up taking a few faceoffs every night, but playing the game on the wing instead of in the middle. But I do think I've always been amazed by the preparation that goes into faceoffs. And I used to love talking to Mikko about it, and it took a couple of years before he'd be willing to, because he was like, I don't want to share with you what my plan is. And it's, but I'll tell you what else is fascinating is when you're doing the games with Wes, and Wes Walls was a student of faceoffs. Wasn't like a dominant faceoff guy in his career or anything, but he worked hard to make himself better there. The number of times that he will call exactly what's going to happen on the draw, where, okay, now in this spot, because you're this-handed and he's that-handed and he's this style of a guy, this is where you're looking to tie up and kick. This is where you're looking to pull it back. You got a left-shot defenseman over here, a right-shot guy behind the net, so you're going to try and pull it back to him so he can get the clear around the wall. I mean, the number of times that he'll look at a situation and tell me what's about to happen is fascinating. And it's a big part of the game, and you know, we hear about it every once in a while, like, well, how often do you guys talk about face-offs, and do face-offs ever lead to wins? Well, yes. I mean, just watch the Wild power play. When they were winning 40% of the draws, they couldn't get a power play goal. When they're winning 65 to 70% of the draws, their power play is the best in the NHL.
Let's talk a little bit about the Wilds last week. They were all over the map. Obviously, tough loss against Colorado, win 8-3. Go to St. Louis, have the worst loss in franchise history by a 9-1 score. And then they come back the next day, seem to do everything right, and then have just, just a bad last minute where they don't get a clear. And next thing you know, a fluky goal where Cam, against a great shooter, can't control the rebound, puts it right into Dumba and in. And then they're 2 seconds from a shootout and lose. And it sort of changes the complexion of what would have been a great story, that they did everything right that game. Now they come into this week. They have a huge game against Arizona on Wednesday. Where do you put the team at right now?
Well, I mean, I think what you described with the game, the second game against St. Louis, is accurate in that it was really a gut punch because they had played so well in a situation where they had every reason to be in trouble. They'd lost the game before 9-1. Now you find out during warmups that you're not going to have Kevin Fiala. You're already playing without Foligno and Bukestad. A lot of reasons to go into that game and say it's just not our night. And instead, the Wild came out and played. They played their asses off, number one. Played the game the right way in a playoff feel. I mean, St. Louis, to their credit, and Wes and I talked about this during the broadcast, it's not the easiest game in the world for that team to come back with the same kind of urgency. After a game after you score 9 times, a lot of times, how many times this year have we said it's so hard to beat a team in these back-to-backs the second game because the team that got beat makes adjustments, they make lineup changes. How many adjustments can you convince your guys to make when you won 9-1 the night before? Mm-hmm. But I thought St. Louis came out and played just as hard in that second game, and it had a playoff feel to it. Like every inch was contested, and the Wild, we're in a position to win the game. And, you know, Talbot kicks the rebound to the only spot he could kick it, and it just happens to hit Matt Dumba in the pants and deflect into the net. I mean, that you can't fault the goaltender on that one, and that's the extra attacker goal for St. Louis that ties it. I thought that the
That's how funny is it? Let me just interrupt you. How funny is it? I just mentioned how the Wild essentially caused them to go get Dubnyk, and they stopped the Blues from trading Hoffman. Like, Hoffman was gone.
He was gone, yeah.
And then he scores two huge goals again. I mean, anyway.
But so I thought that the game that was supposed to be played between the Wild and the Blues, the third game of that three-game set, was the game that was going to dictate it. Because if Minnesota comes back and wins the game at home that was supposed to be played on Monday night, now all of a sudden you realize what we've realized all along, that it's so hard to make up ground in this bonus point era of the NHL. Because if Minnesota wins that game at home Monday night, St. Louis wins two out of three in the series and gains 1 point in the standings and eliminates three games on the schedule in the process. So I thought the fact that Minnesota got a point in the second game in St. Louis was good. I just, you know, the Wild are in a great spot. They've got to take care of business now on the three-game homestand that's Arizona, San Jose, San Jose. You got to get 4, maybe 5 points in that stretch, and if you do, you're sitting in a perfect spot, because both St. Louis and Arizona have to pass you to knock you out of the playoffs.
Yep.
And with the schedules remaining for those teams, that's highly unlikely. I just, you know, the Wild right now, I mean, this is going to be a playoff team. And
is it bad that every time Colorado wins right now, I'm like just jumping for joy? Because I am, from maybe it's just stir crazy from being at home the last year. Like, I have never, I'm going to get double vaccinated on Friday. I just cannot wait to go to Vegas for a playoff round. I've been begging for a playoff round in Vegas since I covered the San Jose Vegas series and the Vegas Winnipeg series in the playoffs. That first year that The Athletic existed with me in Minnesota, we didn't have a Vegas writer yet.
Right.
So I got assigned to Vegas after the Wild got ousted by the Jets. And it was so fun, Anthony. And yeah. I know, I'm sorry to do this to you, because I know you're probably not getting to cover the playoffs from afar. But man, I'm just excited to go to Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm envious, because that the reason why it would be so great is that you go down there and you just settle in for 4 days. You're not, at least that first couple of games, you know, then you're back and forth a little bit. But that first stretch to go down there and play two games, assuming that Vegas finishes second and Minnesota third, you'd be heading in there the day before the series. And, you know, that would be great.
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
it's,
no doubt.
There's no question about it. And I wish that things would change and we'd be able to travel and do the games from site in the postseason. It isn't going to happen. I mean, you know, if it does, I'm just kind of viewing it as a total bonus. This is just what this year is going to be. And at least it appears we'll be able to have playoff hockey in St. Paul for, you know, that's not a bad consolation prize.
Plus, you'll get to have more Sunday dinners, some Kowalskis.
More Sunday dinners, no doubt. And, you know, we've had some great ones. Last night, a surprise off night because the game was canceled. So I stopped at Kowalski's on my way home. And here's a good one. The way it evolved is funny. One night we were making pork chops, and I hadn't had pork chops in a while. I had made a fish one time that I'd ground up some espresso beans on and kind of liked the taste. So I thought, I'm going to try that with pork. So I bought pork chops. I did it one night. About 2 days later, I go to Kowalski's. They have a pepper and coffee crusted pork chop. And so since then, I thought, well, why bother doing this myself? I can just buy it at Kowalski's. So that's what I picked up last night, made a citrus risotto that was just dynamite. Ended up having a great, we'll call it a Sunday dinner on a Monday night, because we had a sudden night off. And anytime you're going to have a great meal at home, you might as well start with the best ingredients. And for the best food, the best supplies you can pick up, I visit Kowalski's, and I encourage you to do the same. We weren't disappointed last night. The dinner was awesome.
It looked good on
Instagram. For a night that was not expected to be a night in my own kitchen.
Yep, no doubt. I was like, maybe I'll come over there. You know what's funny about that whole thing is that I honestly, honest to God, Anthony, like, 2 nights ago on your Sunday dinner, you had a steak dinner that I honestly was like, maybe I should just pop in on Margo and Anthony and just say, surprise.
Yeah, you know that you have two things that you know. Number one is you're always welcome. Number two, there's always a decent chance that there is enough for an extra person to show up. I get ridiculed from time to time for over-purchasing. And, you know, so there's a pretty good shot that if you just showed up at the door, it'd be like, yep, there happens to be some salad in the bowl and sweet potatoes in the pot. I mean, I think we could make it work.
And by the way, in the last year with this pandemic, I thank my lucky stars every single day that Chris Lindahl and his real estate agency was able to sell my unsellable condo in downtown Minneapolis because I was able to have a bigger house to live in rather than a 900 square foot condo during a pandemic. I think that would not have gone well because I've gone so stir crazy during this time. Well, when I hear people talk about why they haven't put their home on the market yet, I hear two main reasons. They don't want tons of people walking around their home, or they don't know where to move to. If this sounds like you, then I have two words of advice, guaranteed offer. My friend Chris Lindahl tells me the real estate market is on the move, the weather's warming up, interest rates are changing, competition is growing, and people are flooding to Chris Lindahl Real Estate's guaranteed offer program. Why? Because it knocks down those two big barriers to selling. When you get a guaranteed offer, you get full market value for your home without doing a single showing. Buyers won't visit your home, and you could take up to 3 months to close, so you have plenty of time to find your next home, especially with the inventory down right now. So guaranteed offer is about control, convenience, and confidence. It's so easy, you'll never go back to the old way of selling. Call Chris Lindahl Real Estate today at 763-401-SOLD or go to chrislindahl.com to request a no-obligation guaranteed offer on your home. That's chrislindahl.com. Let's see, what else do you want to talk to you about?
Well, you
do have a bunch of Twitter questions. You know what we should talk about is the Frozen Four. Lindbergh, NCAA hero, gets a shutout in the final game. Leads UMass. What are the chances? Minnesota gets three of the four finalists in the Frozen Four and don't even get a championship.
It was exciting to see the teams, all the Minnesota teams in the tournament, but then the three that made it to the Frozen Four. The St. Cloud Mankato game was... St. Cloud Minnesota State game was, I mean, what an exciting game that was, and St. Cloud scores in the final minute to win it. And then watching Duluth play UMass in the semis, it actually had the feel of so many Wild games we've watched over the years where Duluth just totally dominates the game for two periods but can't score enough to separate it, and you just knew that something goofy was going to happen and get the game into OT, and that's exactly what did happen. And then in the overtime, I thought UMass was the better team. And,
oh, my God.
They deserved to win. But, boy, for two periods, Duluth could have been ahead 4-0 after the second period. I think the shots were 27-11 or something like that. And they were in a position where they should have been playing in the final. And, you know, Scott Sandlin has done such a great job. I mean, what back-to-back championships and then back to the Frozen Four the next year. I mean, it's unheard of in this day and age in college hockey with how balanced
somebody asked on Twitter if we think that Scott Sandlin will have a chance at an NHL job. He's interviewed for NHL jobs in the past. He's talked to teams. You know, do you think that we've seen so many college coaches come to the NHL and really not perform? We saw that with Dave Hakstol with the Flyers. I mean, what do you think? It's two different games.
It is a different game, but I still think a lot of those guys will end up being successful coaches. I mean, there have been some that have been successful. It didn't work out in Dallas. I think David Quinn, it looks like he's going to be, you know, I mean, now he's got some talent. I think he's going to have some success in the NHL. I think Dave Hakstol is going to be a good NHL coach someday. I mean, when he went to Philadelphia, they weren't ready to.
Yeah.
They were a mess defensively at that point. And, you know, he's still coaching in Toronto as an assistant right now. I think there are a lot of really good coaches at the college level. It's a totally different game. It's a totally different environment. You're dealing with egos and people that are just different than what you deal with at the college level. But I also think we're not that far away from the recruitment part of the NHL is becoming more and more similar to the college game with the way you're trying to get guys to consider coming to your team, to your organization, to your city, both in the free agent market, but also the trade world. And, you know, Scott's a great guy. He just seems like a natural fit for the college game, to be honest with you. And, you know, that doesn't mean that he couldn't succeed in the NHL, but boy, he seems like kind of a smaller town guy.
Yeah.
Like Duluth is, he could go down as one of the great college coaches of all time in Duluth.
Several years ago, I ran into him and his son at the Detroit airport, And I don't know how many kids he has, but I think it was Ryan, the kid that's down at Minnesota State now. And that's another example where it's like I woke up, I'm like, man, I am old. I still remember that. If that's the same son, like I remember that kid when he was a kid. And it feels like it was like 5 years ago. And here he is at Minnesota State scoring huge goals.
For me, it's the same thing. Like, I remember I was covering Gopher games when Jake Gensel was a little kid running around the rink when his dad was an assistant coach at the University of Minnesota. And, I mean, Jake was the same age as my son, AJ. So, you know, I had coached against him and seen him play youth athletics. But, I mean, I remember watching him running around the rink as a little guy. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's one of the premier players in the National Hockey League,
I was watching Columbus last night, and Max Domi just beat the crap out of Connor Murphy, just attacked him, and just like a rag doll. And I'm just like, I remember Connor Murphy when he was like, you know, a little kid down in Fort Lauderdale, and I have that play Adam Lowry and the Fitzgerald kids and Sam Gagne and all these guys.
And for me, it's different because, I mean, I have two sons.
Yeah.
That now there are guys that are playing. Like, when I see young guys come into the National Hockey League and I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, you guys are younger than my sons. And you're playing on this stage. And sometimes you put that in perspective when you start to talk about, like, well, this guy, boy, he seemed to wilt under the pressure, or he didn't handle this situation very well, or, boy, he made a stupid comment to the media. And I'm thinking, well, he's 3 years younger than AJ or Vinny. I mean, if I listened to one of those two guys get interviewed by some reporter, I'd be like, God, I'd be shocked if you don't say something stupid.
Yeah, no doubt about it. By the way, Kyle Rau just came out to the bench and sat down, so that was Kaprizov on the line with Zuccarello and Rask. So the good news to everybody, Kaprizov's playing against the Coyotes on Wednesday.
We did properly evaluate the skating style of those two.
Last thing on the college hockey tournament, but really heartfelt congratulations to Greg Carville, the coach of UMass Minutemen. I've known him for a long, long time. He's brother-in-law's with the old PR guy from the Florida Panthers. But I really got to know him when he was an assistant coach with Ottawa for a long, long time, really tight with the late Brian Murray. So I was just excited to watch him excited during that final game, both the win against Duluth the night before, then obviously the victory against St. Cloud State. And we'll see what the Wild down do with Philip Lindbergh and what they think of him. You know, usually in this situation, you would sign him just because I believe he can become a free agent this summer. But the rules have changed a little bit with the NCAA and the whole that they can technically go back. But you know, you risk losing him. But he is an undersized goalie. I mean, just because he won the NCAA championship doesn't mean that he's a guaranteed superstar in the NHL. But with the Wild's goalie situation, the fact that Hunter Jones and Baraboo, you know, haven't gotten off to the greatest professional starts of their careers, I mean, maybe you want to get them signed. And I would think Henschkitz goes back to St. Cloud, don't you? Maybe not.
Maybe not. I haven't talked to Billy Guerin about it at all, but Henschkitz had a good season up there. And, of course, he's a TG Eagle, so that means he's a dynamite young man. But I just think it's, for those guys, it's all about what more do you have to develop and have to prove at the college level, and do you see an opportunity right now in the organization that drafted you? And I know the Wild think a lot of Henschkitz, so we'll see. I mean, and I know I heard Billy Guerin make that comment the other day that, you know, we'll start talking to all these guys and figure out where the best fit is. But, you know, you mentioned the Wild goaltending situation, and how much has that changed right now? I mean, we talked about the need for Colorado to get a backup goaltender. I mean, I'm not sure right now how much confidence the Wild have in their backup goaltender.
Yeah, I
mean,
Kaapo
Kähkönen he looked shaky from the start. That 9-1 game is not a 9-1 game
I think the Wild might even win that game if Talbot starts that, because I'm telling you, the first if they get a save in those first couple minutes, the Wild were all over them in the offensive zone.
And when they made it 2-1, and okay, now let's take a deep breath, and now we're okay. And then all of a sudden, bang bang, it's 3-1, 4-1. And at that point, I even thought if they weren't playing the next night, Talbot would have been in the net when it was 3-1, if not when it was 2-0.
Yeah.
But because they had a game the next night, I'm sure Dean Evason was looking at it like, look, we're down 2, now we're down 3.
Yeah.
It's hard to throw Talbot in there and then say, hey, we need you tomorrow night. after you played 40 minutes the night before.
And people, I brought that up to people, and they're like, well, it's played back-to-back a gazillion times. It's a little different when you don't prepare to play, and you're sitting on the bench, and you're now thrown in with no warm-up. You don't want to risk injury to your guy that when you have a backup that can't stop a freaking roll of twine right now.
Right.
So, like, that's just the way it works. I mean, most coaches would not have pulled their goalie, and unfortunately, the fourth goal is what killed him that night, and that was the play where he usually a great play – puck handling goalie was just indecisive
out. That goal. Play was the one that told me where his confidence level is right now, and that's what's concerning to me. So I mean, at some point between here and the finish, he has to play.
Yeah,
he absolutely has to play. You can't Cam Talbot's not going to play every night from here to the finish, and maybe all it's going to take is just one game where he goes in there and play. The team plays well in front of him. He plays well in goal, and all of a sudden you got the confidence back. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's all it'll take. But, boy, right now, it is – I mean, and we'll see this weekend, back-to-back games against San Jose. It wouldn't shock me if Cam Talbot plays both of those games. But at some point between here and the finish, Kakinen's got to be back in goal, and the Wild are going to need him. They're going to need him to play and potentially win a game or two between here and the finish.
So a few days ago, Anthony, I went into Starbucks to grab my customary venti Americano with an extra shot, which you've turned me on to. I walked up to the order area, grabbed my drink, and the barista quickly stopped what he was doing and ran over and said, no, that's for somebody else. And I said, no, it's for me. And he looks at me and he goes, holy, you know what? And it's because I hadn't seen him in so long, he didn't recognize me. Well, that's how much weight I've lost since I joined Profile by Sanford last May 1st. I look and feel like a different person, and I continue to motor along, maintain, and even drop a few more pounds, which honestly is uplifting because since I'm traveling again and I haven't resorted to any of my old habits. And that's because of the custom nutrition plan that Profile designed for me and the weekly support I receive from my coach, Danette, who I meet with tomorrow, I believe. I highly, highly, highly encourage you, if you're feeling self-conscious about your weight or just feel like you need a little more discipline in your life, get in contact with Profile by Sanford. If it can work for me, trust me, it can work for you. 6 convenient metro locations in the Twin Cities. Go to profileplan.com for a location nearest you and tell them that Russo sent you. And here's a word from Bosch Law Firm.
Hi, everyone. Attorney Jerry Bosch here with Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. For almost 30 years, we've represented Minnesotans just like you, from border to border and all over the great state of Minnesota, to ensure they're treated fairly and with respect when they've suffered a work-related injury. A work injury can change your life in an instant. Wage loss, medical bills, job insecurity, and the stress of trying to navigate a complicated work comp system on your own. You need someone in your corner who can help you focus on getting back on your feet and getting paid while you do. To make sure you're being paid all available work comp benefits for your injury, please call the attorneys at Bosch Law Firm anytime. The call is always free, and there's never a fee unless we recover benefits on your behalf. Call 651-333-8300 or visit us at workcompexperts.com.
Final segment of Worst Seats in the House, Michael Russo and Anthony LaPanta, high above XL Energy Center in the press box watching the am I having a stroke or the taxi squad wearing orange jerseys? Is that orange or
is
that red?
Yeah, that's orange.
All right, good, because I thought I was having a stroke. I like, they're sort of similar to the – they're not your traditional orange, and it was just driving me crazy there. I'm like, maybe I'm about to keel over.
Which, of course, maybe you should go to the emergency room.
Yeah, I know.
It could be a tight calf muscle.
It really could be.
Could be too much coffee. Maybe your heart rate's too high.
Yeah.
These are all reasons why you've wound up in either emergency rooms or on training tables in the past.
Yeah. We've told the story before when I was on the trainer's table on the essentially a gurney at a private medical hospital in Vegas. And I'm getting like IVs and like ultrasounds for my what turned out to be a sore calf. And you had no care in the world that I was in an emergency room. You're just like, I need Spurgeon right now. The trade deadline's in 20 minutes. Trade
it was
me
actually
Spurgeon.
John Klingberg.
Okay. Gerard for John Klingberg. And I watched Gerard the other night, and I'm like, there's another star that I traded off my fantasy team.
No, I traded you Gerard for Klingberg.
Okay, then I got rid of Gerard.
You traded Gerard to somebody else. Yeah. I traded you Gerard for an expiring contract of John Klingberg going into the playoffs that year. And I was willing to give you, I said, I love this Gerard kid. He's going to be great. He's just not, at that point, wasn't producing in a big way for Colorado. I really like him right now. I mean, we talked about that during those last games against Colorado, that all the talk is about Cale Makar and Bowen Byram. You watch Samuel Girard play?
Yep.
Holy cow. I thought, well, in fact, he was the number one star when they played here, and I thought he was the best player on the ice. He was, the first pass out of the zone was so good. He was so mobile in his own end. His confidence level is high right now, and I really like Girard. But anyway, yeah, I was. I was trying to make a deal with you because I knew that too much walking in Arizona could not land a guy on a gurney, so I figured.
No, I was in. That's what happened. The reason why I had thought I had that deep vein thrombosis or something, because I flew from Costa Rica. I was at my cousin's wedding, through Atlanta to Vegas, landed at 10 p.m. and I couldn't walk when I get off the plane, and so I was convinced that that too much sitting on the airplane gave me a blood clot.
Yeah. You know, so looking ahead at the blood clot.
That's what happens when you go on Google and say, right. How come you can't walk after getting off an airplane? They're like, you're dying. So.
Well, that's what happens when you go to Google.
Yeah.
When I go to Google, I wouldn't be looking at WebMD, I can tell you that. But number two is I don't think I would be assuming the worst.
Yeah. I remember I called like the 24-hour Blue Cross line, and I told them my symptoms, and the guy's like, go to the hospital. And I'm like, all right, I guess I will. And then so I did.
Well, the and guy should, probably gets commission for how many people he sends to the hospital. Yeah,
the walk to the lift from – I was staying at the Cosmo. The walk to the lift took me 10 minutes because I couldn't walk. I was like, can somebody get me a wheelchair, please? Anyway.
At least I didn't have to call the paramedics they did when the youngsters were out there to hang with us in Vegas. Yeah.
Let me ask you a couple more questions because I think we're about to go because Dean's been off the ice for a while and I got my Zoom call lined up here.
Yeah, I have one for you that I was thinking about. That how different is it going to be this year? I thought about it because of the trade deadline when you're analyzing what some moves other teams made. So different this year when – from a team perspective, you've been so focused on one division, but even for guys like you and I and for other fans, I mean, I've kind of zipped through some other games, but when you don't see teams face-to-face and you don't go deep into preparation for a game against, let's say, a Boston Bruins or a Washington Capitals or Toronto Maple Leafs, it's so different. And it's going to be so different watching the playoffs this year when these are teams that you just don't have the depth of knowledge that you normally would because we've only been focused on seven opponents and the Minnesota Wild this season.
So last night I watched the Columbus-Chicago game, and I had the same feeling. Like, I'm watching, I'm like, I had no clue that Oliver Bjorkstrand was playing as well as he was. Or then, like, I'm watching that Pius Suter guy. And it's the first time I've really seen him. I'm like, this kid is
good. He's a pretty good player.
And, you know, it just feels that way. And in the we just had a PHWA meeting a couple weeks ago, and we're actually cutting the voters down to only 100 this year because it's going to take such work for all of us, even somebody like me that prides himself on watching the entire league, from doing awards voting, because a lot of us just haven't seen it. But it is going to be very, very tough.
That'll be interesting. And then I started to think about it, like, imagine next year going back to the old Central Division, which normally the Central Division teams, you've watched, like, you know their players because you've seen them. Okay, this guy got called up, got a shot. We will now go into next season not having seen Dallas, Nashville, Chicago. I mean, these are teams that normally
Winnipeg
too, right? That normally you're banging heads with four or five times a season, and you're so focused on what they're doing and how their young guys are developing and all that kind of stuff that it'll be like starting over because it'll be 2 years since you've seen those teams and watched those teams go head-to-head. The number of times I used to watch the Blackhawks play because I knew that we were going to see them four or five times a year. I watched them about 2 weeks ago in a Sunday afternoon game against Detroit, and I was like, I don't even know who half of these guys are that are on their roster.
You know who was really good in that Chicago game yesterday that I was kind of shocked at is Duncan Keith. He looks like he's back to the old Duncan
Keith. He looks good, and their young goaltender looks good to me.
Yeah. What's the kid's name? Not Vanacek, the other rookie.
It's the Finnish guy.
He's had a good year.
I'm drawing a blank on his name too, but I watched him interviewed in the post game, and I was like, "Wow, this kid is—he's a well-spoken young man, and looks great." Yeah.
But it is funny, you watch these games, and you're just like, "Wait a minute, Patrick Laine's on the free." By the way, Laine looked like he had one goal last night that I'm like, I had no clue he was that fast, and I used to watch him all the time being on the Jets. I'm like, you had that in you. It was like he was shot out of a cannon to score an amazing goal. But I absolutely agree with you. I felt that way. But in terms of the division, at least we'll get to see Arizona three of the next five games. I'm actually going on that road trip, but Arizona is going to be in the Central next year, realigned because Seattle's coming into the league.
Kevin Lankinen,
yes,
the goalie in Chicago.
Here's a good question that somebody asked Dakota Kid. Says, when the Wild are completely healthy, which they almost are, Bukestead's the only one out, who you know, who comes out of the lineup? I know who I'd want out of the lineup. He's the center of their top line right now. Only I would want the center of their first line out of the lineup.
No, I don't disagree with you. I like the way the fourth line looked when it was Bukestead, Bonino, and Sturm playing together a few weeks ago. I thought that was when the team was close to their best. I mean, I don't know. I think sometimes coaches,
somebody will always get hurt, but
yeah, I mean, you got to figure there's going to be guys who either are banged up or just need a night of rest too. That might not be the worst thing in the world to kind of rotate it around and say, all right, let's give this guy a night off on this night. But I think right now, if you're not going to sit Kaprizov or Zuccarello, you're not going to sit anybody on the Greenway, Eriksson, Ekpolino line.
And I don't think you could sit Bonino, because Bonino is their top minute penalty kill and the second best penalty kill in the league.
Yeah, well, and so you're not going to sit Fiala, Hartman, Johansson.
Right.
So now that leaves you with Nico Sturm, who for some reason
it probably will be Nico.
It's got to be Sturm, Rask, or Parisi.
Yeah.
It's got to be one of those three guys because all those other guys I just mentioned are guys that are – they're not only a big part of your 5-on-5 game, but they're all a part of one of your special teams or the other, with the exception of Parisi, really, because Sturm is a big part of your penalty kill. Mm-hmm. Did you see the graphic we had the other when we faced Vegas the other day?
Not sure.
Mark Stone had played more minutes than anybody in the league on the penalty kill without giving up a goal, but then there were four guys that had been on the ice for one power play goal against. And we ranked them by minutes on the kill. Nico Sturm was number two. So essentially, I guess by that measure, you could say the third most efficient penalty kill guy in the National Hockey League. And I think he's been great, and I thought he was great the other night when he came back in the lineup. So I don't know. I mean, it's a great problem to have, to be looking at it and saying, because, I mean, really, Kyle Raul he was fine when he was in the games, and Dean Evason has said a number of times, like, look, those guys, we like the way those guys have played when they've come in. Luke Johnson provided a little spark, but you know, I think it's got to be one of those three guys, and we'll see. And that's, again, we're just assuming that it's with everybody else staying healthy.
Yeah, a couple more questions. Brian Hansen asks, could you walk us through how players and teams communicate back and forth regarding injuries? How much responsibility is on a player to self-report? What are the team responsibilities and expectations? Can you expand on, maybe clarify the timing around the Fiala's injury? It's a great question. So that's the situation where it was not an obvious injury even to John Worley. It happened the night before in the game where he fell late in the game and hurt something in his upper body. I don't want to say what it is, because not that the Arizona Coyotes are listening to this deep in our podcast. Of course they're listening, but you know, at some point
they
probably
turn invested for an hour.
But so that's a situation where Fiala apparently didn't go to Worley after the game, and then woke up the next morning not feeling great, and again didn't go to Worley. And apparently it was like mid-afternoon where he called them to tell them that he was hurt and didn't know if he could play that night. And what that really was dangerous is that there's a roster limit where you could call somebody up. So the Wild almost didn't have enough time to get somebody up from the taxi squad, even though he was obviously traveling. And so Cramarosa was up. So we could tell that right at the beginning when we talked to Evason before the game, you could tell that he even wasn't sure if he was going to play. And it was a true game-time decision. Fiala took a shot, wasn't able to play. They throw Cramarosa in, who played really well. But it was interesting. Yesterday morning, they told Fiala, go out there and test it now and tell us if you can't play now, because we're not doing the whole you're trying again the warm-ups again and having that situation. So Fiala decided after testing it at the morning skate that he was going to play against the Blues and Cramarosa was going to be called up. But that's the way it works. Normally, it's going to be much more communicative, and I think that Fiala probably learned his lesson, because the organization was not very happy with him. Thomas Wood asks, when you get an unexpected night off like last night, what do you do? Anthony already told you he went and bought pork chops. I watched the Columbus-Chicago game.
You want to know what I had to do first? Well, we watched a lot of hockey last night. Watched the Toronto-Montreal game, and then late we were switching back and forth from the Colorado game to the Vegas LA game, which was wildly entertaining, but switching back and forth from Colorado, Arizona to that game. But so yesterday I came down here for morning skate, and we've talked a few times about trying to develop a new routine and what the new normal way of operating is this season. So my new strategy for home games was to come down for morning skate, get my work done here at the rink, and then when I go to the gym, instead of packing up all my stuff and bringing it with me, I thought, I lug this backpack to my car. I don't use it anymore. I'm just going to the gym. I stop at Kinko's and print my line charts, go to the gym, and then come back. So I just started leaving my stuff here at the rink. Well, of course, yesterday I get out of the shower at Lifetime Fitness to the text from our producer saying, hey, the game's canceled. And I was like, well, now I got to drive all the way back down to St. Paul to get my computer and everything because I had just left it in the booth. So that was how I spent my surprise off day, was driving back to St. Paul to pick up all my stuff. And
was there security here at that point?
There was security here.
If you forget, like when I leave a game at 1 a.m., the place is padlocked. And right. If I leave something in the press box, which I did like you can't even get it back in.
That's at 1 a.m. I mean, this was – I'm talking – 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so I came down here. There was still security here. I did have to try to find somebody to unlock our booth because they had locked up the booth. And it worked okay because I happened to get back here about the time Billy Guerin was doing his post-trade deadline Zoom. So sat down and listened to that and then, you know, ended up making my stop at Kowalski's to pick up the food for dinner at home last night. But it was a little bit of a like, oh, you got to be kidding me. I mean, I got to drive back down from White Bear down to downtown St. Paul just to pick up my computer because I knew that today they were sketch, but what if they had canceled practice today?
Yeah.
Then it would have been like, well, I can't just sit at home without my computer and everything for 2 days. I mean, if I had known for certain that practice was going to go today, I would have said, I'll just leave it there and go down there in the morning.
Well, it really is like tunnel vision for a hockey writer on trade deadline day. Like until the Twins game, there were reports that it was probably going to be postponed, and people were asking me on Twitter what will happen with the Wild game. It's like I was not paying attention to what was going on in our world right around us. And so, you know, next thing you know, the hour before the trade deadline, I'm praying the Wild don't make any trades because I'm sitting there working that other story. And so it was just crazy. This was a fun podcast, Anthony. We're about to get Dean Evason on our Zoom. So pay attention to Twitter for any news or updates. But I did tweet out the lines and everything like that. Thanks, as always, to Anthony for joining our great, great sponsors, Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Kinetico water treatments, Minnesota Propane, Kowalski's, Chris Lindahl Real Estate, Profile by Sanford, and Bosch Law Firm. Thanks, Anthony.
Always talk next week.
So much coming out, there's nothing going in. I know that you feel like you're never going to win. But the world won't forgive a winner.
Can somebody get me a wheelchair, please?